The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, Zurich Australia Limited, ABN 92000010195, AFSL 232510, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to the Life Insurance Podcast for Ensemble. I'm your host, Ben Donald, Managing Director of Life Advice Partners and currently completing a doctorate in life insurance. My goal is simple, improving life insurance outcomes for Australians. This podcast series is all about bringing life insurance back onto the radar for advisors across the country. Each episode features real conversations with the people who live and breathe this work every day, uncovering the lessons, processes, and the stories that help advisors lift confidence, capability, and client outcomes. Whether you write two policies a year or 200, this podcast is here to help you deliver better protection, build stronger businesses, and ultimately serve more Australians. Let's jump in.
Zurich is proud to be supporting this episode. Experience Zurich and OnePath advisor portals with new and improved digital capabilities and an enhanced range of self-service functionality, helping make your business more efficient, saving you time and removing complexity. It's everything you need in one place. Partner with us today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. Today we have a very special guest, in fact, so special that I believe this is the third time we've asked him to come back. Mr. Mitchell Ramsbotham, welcome.
Thank you, my friend.
I think it actually might be the fourth.
All right, okay.
You guys continue to resonate that I have a face for radio and prefer to put me in front of a microphone than a camera, but I totally understand.
Mate, unfortunately, we do have cameras, so if we could just shut them off for everybody else's benefit.
Yeah, anybody and everybody out there, please tune out of the video, just the audio. We'll get by.
Right, so look, you are here for the fourth time because you're part of, I think, what looks to be the fastest growing, or at least every second day you seem to be in the news, fastest growing advice firm, and your role at brand new Coastal Advisory Australia is the head of growth and strategy.
Correct.
How's that going, mate?
Yeah, good. Good. So the growth that you talk about has dictated that over a period of time, the org chart changes. And I suppose a lot of that will go into our conversation today as well. And it turns into specialty. So I've gone from general manager into a chief operations officer role into now head of growth and strategy as things start to become more and more specialized and you get to play to your strengths because that's where you should be spending your time.
Yeah, right. I think that might be a theme, mate, the specialist component. Yeah. Mate, so if we wind back, when I first met you, I reckon 15 years ago, maybe you were a BDM at AIA. Yes. and prior to that, you were with TAL. Mate, so a large, obviously, what we want to sort of center the conversation on here is life insurance, mate, and that background is really, really key to the conversation. Mate, so can you take me, because I actually don't know the full story, mate, can you take me back through the history of Mitch with
the
life
history,
insurance?
Yeah, history of me. So I entered the industry, as many people did, when that was sort of the way that you could, and it was by accident. I was studying in a vastly different field than financial services. Wasn't really enjoying it and ended up in a role, cold calling, booking meetings, learning the craft, being put through education through a bunch of people that saw something in me and wanted to give me a shot.
Yep.
Which I appreciate immensely now considering where I find myself.
Who was the first one that hired you?
It was actually a business on the Central Coast called Moneywise.
Okay.
David Lodesman was the MD. There's still a couple of guys in the industry. Brett Gilday is still in the industry, still doing his thing.
Right.
And they were the first people to give me my shot and hook me into where I now sit.
So a couple of people saying thank you, others maybe not so much.
Yeah.
So, gents, thank you. It's all right. So then, so that was as a, what is the CDO or CD? What was the title?
So basically, I was just given a shot to sit in a windowless room and make phone calls and book appointments. And then when I did, I was given the benefit of sitting in on the way that all came together and learn the craft.
And so you're calling advisors, just basically saying, "Hey, can we get a meeting with you?"
No, calling clients out of the yellow pages. Oh,
right. Okay.
Where you're going to call plumbers this week. Call plumbers, tell them that this is what we do and to come in and sit with us, and you can then sit in on the meetings and the strategy and learn how we do what we do.
Brilliant. And then where to from there?
I progressed to a role in Sydney working with a third party that did life insurance for Westpac directly.
Mm-hmm.
They then had an advice division. So it was it's like an associate advisor role with a trajectory crew to full advice.
Yeah.
So once I finished the education, I got an advice role there and was an advisor, both wealth and insurance, for about two and a half years throughout that period I worked for the business.
Yeah, right.
And my manager that worked with me there moved from heading up that advice division to heading up a distribution team in Cominshaw.
Okay.
We were very good mates. He needed a staff member. I was looking at a new career horizon. Yep. And the rest is history.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mate, and then the big call out from that, I can't let you go without mentioning this, but I believe there was an award involved at some point in the last BDM of the year for TAL, was it?
I was BDM of the year for TAL, and I got the Money Management BDM of the Year New South Wales.
Brilliant.
In the same year.
Yeah.
So at least for 1 year in my career, I have performed at a decent level.
Like, pulled the wool over their eyes for 12 months.
Yeah. I did something right. Yeah. It all culminated and we got there.
Mate, so as the BDM, the guy that's going out there and seeing advice practices across New South Wales, both AIA and TAL, huge levels of exposure to every kind of financial planning practice, basically, that exists in Australia, right? One-man band, giant national entities.
Yeah, you name it.
Yeah, so what was the key takeaway there? Tell me the difference, if you could, between the guys that did it, or the guys or girls that were able to do it well, and those that weren't.
We're talking specifically risk.
Yeah, correct. Because I imagine you had a lot of people promising a lot of things and maybe, you know, a few lunches here and there to try and convince them.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. So the guys that I saw do it really well, they either really heavily specialized and that's all that they did, or it was a very consistent, highly thought through, very well documented methodology that they used to do it properly. You can't be half in risk insurance and get it done effectively or correctly. It's not going to benefit the advisor and the advice business. It's not going to benefit the client because it won't be done correctly. There's a bit of a misnomer out there that it's really quite easy to do. I think that while there still is a lot of really high quality businesses doing it very, very well, there's been a bit of a shift in risk specialists where, you know, certain circumstances over the last few years has seen a lot of experience leave financial services in specifically in that risk only space, where education standards and those sorts of things, whilst I totally agree that the industry needed to come up to a certain level to be deemed a profession, which I truly believe that it is, and I think the right moves were made. It's just unfortunate that those circumstances meant that we lost some really, really good, very smart heads that were doing risk as a specialty at the same time.
Did you see, so you got the risk specialists and you got the guys that are really documented processes. Any people in between that you like?
Not that did it well.
Yeah.
Not that did it well. The ones that did risk well were either a specialist or a multidisciplinary firm that had a real focus on doing it. It's never successfully done as an aside.
Mm.
It has to be a focus. It's not a tack on. It is, there's such clear benefit to a client if done correctly. There is such severe detriment to a client if it's not done correctly, or even broached correctly, that I think that I don't really believe that people that did it as an aside really ever made a go of it.
Did you see any firms that thought about it and executed growth in the area? So were there any, for example, did you see any one-man bands? Like, there are guys out there now like Paul Melbourne that are sort of starting from scratch and building a risk business. Did you see any of that back then? Or
heaps.
Yeah.
Heaps. I saw people come out of other industries, come out of general insurance, and all it took was a passion for it and an ability to see the process and the requirements, the methodology, the relationships, and the focus that you needed to be able to ascertain the goals, outcomes, requirements, and the nuance to putting it together and focusing on doing it. And I saw people build very, very successful businesses, both larger and one-man bands, in risk alone.
Yeah.
You don't really – and you still see that to a certain extent these days, but there's nowhere near as many as there used to be, right?
Yeah, it's quite sad, obviously, but it's not great for the average Australian, which is why we're having these conversations to try and get it back up again.
Yep.
Mate, so inside Coastal, right, I don't know how big you guys are. How many advisors now is it?
We've got over 30 advisors around 14 locations throughout the country.
Yeah, wow. And recently changed the name?
Recently did change the name from Coastal Advice Group to Coastal Advisory Australia. Just part of a bit of a rebrand to the business to align with our goal and aspiration to be a coast-to-coast, a well-known home brand in Australian, in the Australian environment. We got some fairly lofty goals and things that we'd like to do, and that's all part of it.
Yeah, cool. And I imagine, obviously, life insurance is the center of that, mate.
Absolutely. Well, it is central to it. We live and breathe what I was just saying, and we don't have half a go at it. Hmm. We've got multiple full-time advisor staff members in a dedicated business unit, 6 full-time support staff. It's a proper, fully fleshed out department in the firm that does it properly.
Yeah.
We do not allow a dabble. It has to be done.
Yeah.
It's not predictated that a wealth advisor can't do insurance, but if you're not going to have a full go, pass it off and let somebody else do it properly.
How do you all right, so you've got a new advisor that comes in, right? And this might be an acquisition or it might be somebody joining, right? And 90% of the job is what you would call traditional financial planning, superannuation, investments, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they want to do a little bit of life insurance. What is it that Coastal's doing to facilitate dabbling is not the right word, but to facilitate that little bit of life insurance inside a safe environment in Coastal? What are you guys doing differently?
Anything that a wealth advisor does, so where I say that we empower them to do that, we would have any and all of the advice that is being delivered by that wealth advisor. If they want to have a go and they want to do it, it would still be backed by all of those dedicated resources in that risk stream rather than the support team that would sit next to them to support with the wealth.
So
there's a bit of a handoff process where a specialist group of individuals with separate processes, procedures, relationships, methodologies put their expert opinion up to support the advice rather than it just being done as an aside.
Okay. All right. So if you're an advisor and you were thinking about joining a group like Coastal and you wanted to do a little bit more life insurance, you've got the systems, the process, the framework, all the things that you spoke about at the start of the conversation to make it safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do it as
well. And we wouldn't generally, you know, if it's risk only, we would generally have that done by the advisors that sit in the risk team, in the life insurance team, where it is part of the broader strategy for a client that is engaged on both wealth and insurance. Go for it. Absolutely. Everyone's got targets to hit, and everybody, if given the right opportunity with the right safeguards and, again, process and methodology behind it, it's really, really viable for an advisor with the training, education, and desire to do it to be supported into getting that done.
And as head of growth, how core is that feature to the advisor's remit?
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. I truly believe that still there's a lot of rhetoric out there around how hard it is. I don't think it's that much harder than it used to be. Underwriting is underwriting. It's always been underwritten.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of technology and a lot of things out there that allow so much efficiency these days, and it's never been an easy thing to do. It's never been a lay down mazare, but it is so important for a number of reasons. Now, that's from an advice compliance point of view. It's so hard to scope out. If you have issues down the track where you coulda, shoulda, woulda, It's very hard if you don't have the right defensible position and conversations that have gone into that advice engagement.
Yep.
I truly believe that not only as part of the business compliance and protecting your own neck and having a defensible position, I think as part of your value proposition to a client and your ability to service them ongoing and achieve the goals that you're putting in front of them in the first place, a lot of that is bound by money continuing to come in.
Who would have thought your income's important?
Yeah, right? Yeah. A lot of the modeling that you do goes up before it starts to come down. If that down starts before the up can continue, yeah, you start to run into a few issues. And I think it's, you know, it's so important that that is considered as part of a full financial plan, irrespective of how hard it may be perceived to be or some of the nuance that goes into it these days.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I see it. We see it and feel it all the time. Premiums and changes and out-of-cycle increases and all of that sort of stuff. Mm. I get it. But it's very, very important for people to understand just how valuable it is. Very dear to my heart. And I think it's important for advisors to rethink just how important it is, not just to their client, but also to their value proposition, to the ongoing viability of their business in certain circumstances, because it is basically what will continue to keep a client in the event that something goes wrong.
So where does it life insurance feature in the conversation with the client and the portfolio? So you've got an advisor, 90% of their job is funds management, superannuation investment. Some of them want to do a little bit of life insurance. Others don't want to do life insurance. You talked about life insurance being key to the client value proposition. Is it a mandatory conversation that you have to, that your guys have to have with every client is about life insurance?
We're viable. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you mean by viable? Sorry.
So we have to look at our specific target demographic within our business. Mm. A lot of our wealth clients you would find are pre-retiree, retiree. So absolutely. But it's not necessarily on writing new. It's about managing what they've got and maintaining sustainability of what they got. I think one of the biggest things missed in a value proposition for financial services business is just how powerful a review conversation around risk, their risk requirements, and potentially, you know, nobody, it's a bit of a dirty word, but reducing sums insured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's not something that perpetually should go up. Like premiums will always increase, but the value of the conversation around proper financial advice with insurance is that there's a declining need over time, or there's a change in need over time, and you can really set expectations and have add some significant value to the conversation if you are reviewing it correctly.
Hmm.
You know, they get their renewal and you say, don't worry about that because you don't need that much cover anymore. We're going to do this. Premiums will go down from X to Y.
Yeah.
You know, there's significant value in that conversation, understanding their circumstances, having the safety net being appropriate, not being a cash flow drag.
Yeah.
There's so much more that comes into it than just being a set and forget proposition.
It's a life raft, not a pleasure cruise.
Yeah. So back to what you said, that a lot of the initial engagement for us is the younger demographics will tend to come in potentially risk only, and it's a great intergenerational play and a great entry point into the ecosystem of coastal advisory.
Yep.
We talk about this intergenerational wealth transfer over the next period of time and making sure that we're having the right conversations. And, you know, the opportunity absolutely does present itself, but how many of those young people are advisors talking to these days, and have they engaged, and on what proposition?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them, if they're a wealth-only business, you know,
just pass it off.
Yeah, pass it off. They're not having those conversations really because they haven't engaged them in any way, shape, or form. If we've got the right specialized offering, be that, you know, lending, specialized life insurance and the right advice for the right time in their advice life cycle to grab hold of them, get them into the ecosystem, bring them into the fold, communicate with them correctly. We believe that we stand ourselves in a much better position to maintain and pick up that relationship as the intergenerational wealth transfer does come around compared to coming to a life event down the track and going, oh, mum and dad were with us. You should probably just come across. That's not going to work.
Yeah, right. So you're actively engaging with the kids.
100%.
The clients.
100%.
Where you have, and this is a really big challenge a lot of people are facing now, advisors, sorry. When you have the 40-year-old, whatever it may be, right, they're generally peak life insurance requirement, right? Massive mortgage, young kids. What are you doing? Are you charging a fee? Is it commission only? How are you approaching the conversation? So unfortunately, a lot of the reality is when we talk about wanting younger clients coming in to advice, the commercial reality for a lot of financial planning practices, it's just not viable to engage with them. So how are you guys doing that?
So there's a multitude of ways, and we do set a minimum. So we will do it on a commission basis. We have done some we've talked about this in previous episodes, but we're really conscious of what our cost to serve is and what our underlying cost to onboard a client is. So we've got a minimum fee that we will expect or need. Outside of that, there would be a fee to implement. Doesn't get implemented terribly often.
Yep.
But otherwise,
is it a conversation up front with the client?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So in that first meeting or in the first engagement, first email, whatever it may be, you say, hey, welcome to Coastal. This is our sort of upfront fee. Yep. And if there's commission associated, then we'll drop the fee appropriately.
Yep. And it's signed off, letter of engagement. They understand what they're getting before they get into it.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned before, and I think this is really important because I sort of fell into this trap. I was terrified when I first looked to implement something like that in my practice. And I was really worried it would scare people away, right? But
if people are scared of money the first time you talk to them, they're going to be your worst retention nightmare.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And every client deserves service, don't get me wrong, but they are going to be the $250 a year renewal commission that you get that calls you three times a year because they've had something wrong or they don't agree with the new premium that they're getting, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Money conscious and not seeing the value of the proposition as a whole to begin with.
Yep.
Is going to be a massive red flag.
Couldn't agree more, mate.
They need to be engaged in a different way and see the value of what you're doing, or they're never going to see it.
Yeah, fair call. Just quickly then, so go back 15 years. How often were you seeing the fee conversation with those cohorts of clients back then compared to now?
Next to never.
Yeah. So you think the frequency of advisors charging fees is picking up a bit?
Yeah, I think the sophistication of practices across the board is picking up, and a bit of a saying that we have is passing the first class champagne back into economy. And that just means that you have a different cohort of clients helping another cohort of clients to exist. Every client should be serviced on their own merits.
Yep.
And their own segmentation, and a business should have a segmentation proposition that dictates that we segment not just our wealth clients, but also our risk clients.
Yeah, okay. Right?
Very important that there's a delineation between the way that they're serviced, and it would not be fair to make that common across all, because there's high-value risk clients just like there's high-value wealth clients, and they deserve more because they give you more.
Yep.
I think that businesses are becoming more sophisticated. Margins are becoming smaller. People are becoming acutely more aware of that. And I think the industry is just starting to pick up on what some of those drags to their bottom line were and some of the unsustainable activities that they were doing. And that was just, you know, there's other propositions out there for it now is what I'd say. You know, there's GA propositions that allow probably more high turnover, less complexity, and can make that type of thing viable.
Yeah.
But in a fully fledged financial planning, full advice, highly documented, really rigorous sort of proposition.
Mm.
There's a cost to doing business there, and that
you can't just AI it.
And you can't just run everything through AI, but
mate. So tell me, okay, you've got the rigorous systems and processes in place, right? And you've got a dedicated team of life insurance specialists now. It feels like, you know, you buy a new business every week. When you're, and I'll talk more about that in a sec, but I just want to understand how, when you're integrating a business that potentially doesn't talk to clients about life insurance. So you've got an advisor, their portfolio of clients range between 40 and 70 or whatever it may be. Their focus has always been super, but they've got risk conversations that are missing. How do you go about engaging existing FUM clients, existing financial planning clients that have never had a risk conversation? How do you engage with them about life?
So a lot of that would be enabled by the tech that we use because it leads the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I will go back and I'm probably not going to give you the answer that you want here. And that probably comes back to
the
demographic of clients that we've got is probably not ideally suited to new business conversations there. Mm. It would normally be a different cohort of clients that we have gained through other channels, being our organic marketing, right, lead generation, yep, and those types of things that would come from. It would be referrals and asking the right questions of existing clients around family, friends, children, etc.
Sure.
And you know, the things that we've talked about for years ad nauseum, it's probably not the existing clients. It's probably generation two, generation three, and the advisors being worded up, empowered, and provided all of the tools and ammunition to go out and have the right conversations to achieve that objective.
Yeah.
On the flip side, where there is an alignment based on age, availability, and requirement, where we do buy a business, and I can think of one recently, a lot of that would be backed by the tech that we use. So the tech that we use doesn't sort of allow you just to move past that. A lot of that because of the illustrative nature of the tech that we use, it sort of forces.
What is it?
We're with Wealth Central.
Yep.
Rhombus, who we're still licensed by, RI Advice.
Yep.
We have access to a client cash flow modeling and scenario modeling tool called Wealth Central, which allows you to build your insurance philosophy into the software.
Yeah.
So any of these conversations are captured and you get all of the outputs.
Right. And is it a process where the advisor, like you said before, sort of has to follow the bouncing ball inside the system? And if you don't have you don't have a conversation about insurance, do not pass go and do not collect 200.
Yeah. It's fair. Like a lot of advisors have a specialty. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to do it, you find, and you would probably agree that a lot of the businesses that do this, much to my point before, either specialize in it and have a real go at it. And if they're not going to have a go at it, they do in turn have a go at it, but they do it in a different way, and that's by referral.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky in our business, because of the scale that we have, I've been able to build, for want of a better term, an internal referral partner rather than having to go external.
Yeah. Okay.
If they don't have the capability, if it does come up, but they're not confident, competent, nor passionate about doing it, There's another way. Yeah.
When do you reckon that risk department within Coastal sort of formed? And the specifics don't really matter.
4 years ago.
What I'm really asking is, before that internal referral system existed, what did your advisors do with life?
They all did it individually.
Right. Yeah. And it just wasn't.
They all did it individually, had a lash, probably wasn't efficient enough. Multiple different processes, providers, relationships. There was no consistency.
Hmm.
Okay. There needs to be a level of consistency.
As their head of growth, I'm sure that was heaps of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. But it does. It makes it really highly scalable, you know, because, you know, from our viewpoint now, and I know that generally your insurers will have you on, have your codes aggregated and that sort of stuff, but we just write under one corporate AR code now.
Yep.
So when we go through to the insurers, everything's on one code. So it's all of our data's a lot more clean.
Yeah.
When we report to them, we probably look like a bit of a bigger deal because of the premium in force that we have and those sorts of things. And the without having to go through and granularly sort of aggregate it all and pull it all together. So I think the importance for us has just been, while the guys were very successful and we were really lucky that there was some skill and ability and experience previously, where our business is now at a point where we need consistency or things just start to fall apart.
Yep.
And consistency means that we either need people to really know what they're doing or get it done by somebody who really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Okay. And that's effectively one of the key pillars of strength for you guys in growth, yeah, is that you're going from one to another to another. As you look to buy a business, are you still at a point where you're taking on board feedback from that practice, that business, to say, right, can we improve our process and systems a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got an acquisition coming up very soon, and in recent conversations with the vendor, they've shown us through some of the processes that they run pre-review, which has really excited us, and we're very, very keen to start adopting some of that. So while we're large and have some significant scale, we don't elude ourselves to the fact that there's probably a better way to do it, and we're constantly still looking to learn. And I think that's probably been a driver of our growth, is that we don't just dig our heels in and think that our way is the only way.
Yep.
We have a way to do things, but always open to a different interpretation and to polishing that.
So she'll be right? No, not quite.
She'll be right. It's not a business strategy.
Yeah, nice. Number one quote, I think.
I make sense now.
Yeah. But, all right, so going to incorporate a new business. We're going to look at their systems and their process, and how are we going to acquire a portfolio? So if we have a client that is half farm, half life, or three-quarter farm, one-quarter life, are you breaking it up and divvying those clients into their specialist areas? So you've got life insurance is delivered by a business unit within Coastal. I'm guessing superannuation is the same. You've got a business unit that'll do something along those lines. If a client's got both, how are they being engaged?
If they've got both, it will tend to sit with the wealth advisor.
Right.
And unless the scope of it becomes too complex, and then you've just got that internal referral mechanism. So for all intents and purposes, the easiest way to sort of break it up is that if we are to do an acquisition or a partnership with another practice, all of the risk-only clients, so the only revenue and the only advice area is risk, that would go to the risk-only team and be segmented and serviced accordingly. The wealth clients would immediately go across to the wealth team, who, again, are empowered to and have the backing of the risk team to continue to perpetuate that service if it is in excess of what they have the capability
to do. Like a business insurance or something like
whatever
that.
Whatever it might be. Yeah. It can absolutely kick in.
Gets divvied back up to the riskies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right people doing the right roles, Ben, is very important.
Fair enough, mate. What have you seen from a practice that you're buying that you would suggest? And again, without giving secrets away, because I know you guys are continuously buying stuff, don't tell people too much, but if you're talking to a financial advisor that's looking to sell their business in the next 5 years or so, right, as it pertains to life insurance and maybe they're a dabbler, what do you think is a good way to tighten up the business, to tighten up the proposition for sale, to increase the value of that business?
I think that there's probably a lot of latent value sitting around in advice businesses where their target market is, I suppose, right for the picking for risk to be written. From a valuation point of view, and this isn't you know, war room secrets by any means.
I was going to say, nobody's listening, but we're out there.
But, you know, there's industry data and benchmarking data around transactions, partnerships, whatever you want to call them in the industry would still show you that risk commission is very highly valued as a weighted metric in valuation analysis and multiple analysis for transactions. You know, fee revenue can get up and above, but it's on a very, very tidy, very polished, quite a premium business.
Yep.
Risk revenue and its long-term viability and its sort of long-tail payout and engagement and fundamentals really lead it to being quite a highly valued asset. So if somebody's looking to sell or tidy up their practice for sale, a focus on risk is huge because it is one of the easiest sort of high value multiple activities that they can do, save for going out and completely restructuring, resegmenting, and upping all the fees elsewhere or whatever else it might take. There's some serious latent value in practices just sitting in risk that hasn't been written.
Yeah, right. Okay. And that's across existing clients and, like you said, that second generation.
Yep.
Yeah. Are you actively engaging with that on the second generation, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's that. So that's one of the big things that we've done. And just like risk, we've got, I see the virtues and significant value of a multidisciplinary practice in the first place. Data and research would clearly shows that the more services that a client has with you, the more affinity they have and the higher likelihood they have to stay.
Yep.
I think that one of the best things that we've done is having multiple entry points for people to engage with business. Coastal Advisory.
Yeah.
If your specialty, and a lot of specialties out there are high net, let's look at high net wealth. This isn't even ours. High net wealth. I look after high net wealth clients. Cool. That's really, really good. You got multi-millionaire, high net wealth families, and you've probably never spoken to their kids ever. As soon as something happens to those parents and you don't have those kids involved in one service, not in your ecosystem, not engaged with the business at all.
Yep.
What's the first conversation if something goes south and you want to try to retain those assets under management and the relationship that you've got with that family unit, right? So I think that there's massive value and virtue to having a service proposition and a business that doesn't just support the individual that is the core client,
yep.
but has the ability to support their family unit and the changes in their advice life cycle from the generation that is your core client all the way through to their G2 and sort of G3.
So then would that be, so that's across the generations and that's then obviously across the services. Mm. Coastal has that capacity where they've got internal lending, life and all the rest of it.
Lending, life, accounting, yep.
For the areas that you don't cover, what are you doing?
Refer.
Right.
Refer to a specialist that is highly culturally aligned with our business, because I think that there is, the only time that we've ever seen an issue is where you lose control of the client experience. Mm-hmm. And we're very, very considered around our client experience and the way that we communicate with and engage our clients.
Yeah.
If there's a vast difference between the partner and yourself, it's going to be a bit of a mishmash
yep.
of an engagement. So we've just got really highly vetted, very confident relationships with businesses that are very highly culturally aligned to us.
Yeah.
And some of those have even fleshed out to the extent that, you know, we've got a solicitor that now co-shares a location with us on the Central Coast that we're very highly aligned with, fantastic business, and have the ultimate trust in what they do.
Yeah.
Very reciprocal relationship and works perfectly. And
it's funny, hey, because that business model of, we talked before, doers, dabblers, right? So if you're dabbling, stop dabbling, get into it properly or refer it out. For the one-man band practice, for the smaller financial planning practice, right, that involves partners. But effectively, that's the genesis of where Coastal's come from. So you had the partners and then you're just expanding the services. So I imagine you referred to an accountant and then eventually you've bought an accountant.
Yeah.
You've become part of the business.
Yeah, and it gets hard.
Strategy.
It gets hard, right? You know, it's so hard to send a client out after working so hard on your value prop and portraying this client experience that you want them to see, to go and see this person as soon as they leave your office. You have no control over that client experience.
Yep.
But by virtue of that referral, the other business becomes an extension of your service proposition.
Yep.
And if they're a high value client and you don't have a formal relationship, or you just have sort of an ad hoc, oh, here's a name and a number, go get it done here, you will still be rated and ranked based on the work that's done by the person that you've sent them to.
Yeah.
You need to have such high conviction in the names and numbers that you give of other professionals, because they can blow up your business so quickly and it can be really no fault of your own.
Yeah. A really good mentor of mine was saying this the other day, you know, it takes 20 years to build a reputation, but it takes about 20 minutes to ruin it.
It doesn't even have to be you that does it.
Mate, so I can't let you go without asking some cheat sheet questions right now. You've been an advisor. You're now head of growth of what looks like from the outside, certainly one of the fastest growing advice businesses in the country, right? And you've worked inside a couple of insurers, right? What is it that a financial planner should be doing when it comes to life insurance? It's not difficult. It's not easy. Top tips and tricks for financial advisors wanting to grow their insurance capabilities.
I think do it or don't.
Yep.
It's as simple as that.
Something about the
So either focus on wealth and refer it out, or really have a good crack at writing at risk internally, but make sure that you have a solid methodology and philosophy around how you do it, so that in the event that you have given advice, you know, it's great to just throw numbers out there and you know, client hasn't taken them and da-da-da-da-da, but that does not leave you in a defensible position. And there's really simple ways for an advice methodology around insurance to be put together. And I truly still believe, and I don't just say this because a lot of them are my friends, but there is still some fantastic BDMs out there in distribution land that have a lot of value to give. There's a lot of tech, a lot of propositions, and a lot of high-quality BDMs out there that would really love the opportunity to help a business build out a philosophy to have a highly viable insurance proposition in their business. If it's something that interests the advisor, go for it. If it's not, there are so many other propositions out there to refer to high-quality businesses that are doing risk really, really well. Just make sure, like I said about that, that whole referral proposition, that you're highly confident with them, that the client experience is going to be much the same quality as what you're going to provide, and you have that high level of confidence. But I know there's multiple businesses out there that are doing this really, really well. Just refer, get it done properly, make sure your client's looked after, your business is looked after, you're engaging the second generation. Like, there's so much value to it, and it's all still out there for the taking.
That's a really good suggestion, that just going straight to an insurance BDM, right? Because as you say, a lot of them with the market these days and the experience of them, they can either almost become like a business coach, a mini business coach about life insurance within your practice. But ultimately, if the conversation lands to the point where, hey, I'm going to refer, guess what? You're talking to the insurance BDM who's going to know who the risk specialists are.
That's exactly right. They're going to have those relationships. They're going to be, you know, the high quality partners that they have in their business already, right?
Yeah. So,
They can either assist you to refer and facilitate that relationship, or help you build out the proposition. And they are all champing at the bit to do it.
Yeah.
Because you're right, the market needs some revitalization. And it's still hugely viable.
Mm.
It just needs to be done properly.
Yeah. Brilliant, mate. Mate, well, thank you so much, mate. This has been wonderful. Thanks very much for the chat, mate. Any other points that you wanted to talk about? How does Coastal want to grow into the future? Because I think you were late to this conversation because you were on yet another M&A conversation.
We're going to continue to do the same thing. So we're seeing fantastic organic growth.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is led by what we were talking about, those specialist propositions, and just having multiple different gateways and entry points into the business and being very, very considered about what we do and how we do it as at our core. And of course, mergers and acquisitions. You know, I've got a handful of partnerships that we're looking to do even before the end of the financial year, now being March.
Thanks for your time. I don't know, you've got to go in 30 seconds.
we're going to continue to grow and acquire. And I think it's important. You know, we talk about this intergenerational wealth transfer. Well, the same thing's happening with a whole generation of advisors out there. And we're lucky enough to find ourselves in a position where we have the track record and the experience to really become the second generation custodians of some of these businesses, and do the right thing with the right focuses and take them into the new world and just build something. Like beautiful. I said, coast to coast. Yeah, beautiful coast to coast, and have a household name.
Yeah, wonderful. Excellent, mate. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming along.
Cheers. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.